Hello and welcome to Twin Justice, where we're doing justice. We're your hosts, Maida Vaglamudi and Sriya Nalala, discovering what is right and wrong from cases of the past and present. This is Frisco Daily Podcast for Monday, May 6th. Today, my fellow judges, we will be discussing judicial inequalities based on race, gender, and wealth. We will also be talking about parallels and differences between these three key points in relation to current events and the award-winning novel To Kill a Mockingbird.
I think before we begin, we need to give our judges a background on this novel. A constitutional disagreement takes place when an accusation is placed on a man of color for raping a wealthy white girl. Barriers are created between those of whom support who, and the trial for justice takes place. The novel is from the eyes of a young girl nicknamed Scout as her father, Atticus Finch, takes the supporting role of the black man in the small southern town in Alabama is shaken by the case. Harper Lee chose to set the book during the 1930s, or the Great Depression, in order to highlight the numerous discriminations being held against African Americans.
The supposed victim of the case is Myella Yule, the daughter of a wealthy white man, Bob Yule. During the trial, Myella is never brought to court because of excuses made by her father, as he knew he was lying and didn't think his daughter could lie as well. Although at one point in the story, Atticus Finch asked court to bring Myella because she was the murderer of the case. But when brought to court, she stuttered and didn't give an actual testimony, but instead pointed to Tom, the colored man, as that he was the one who raped her. Myella was never brought to court again, because a woman's word wasn't sought as equal to a man's at court. Thus, her father spoke on her behalf. In the 1930s, this was the case, but today, treatment of women has improved.
Gender inequality still exists throughout the world as of present day, and such was the case with Lily Ledbetter. Ledbetter worked as a manager for Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company for nearly 20 years. She learned through an anonymous letter that she was earning much less than the male managers in 1998 when she was about to retire. Ledbetter sued Goodyear in 2007 and the case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Ledbetter became an equal pay activist. She fought against wage discrimination action and also fought for women's equal rights ever since.
So how did the Supreme Court deal with this case?
Sadly, Maida, Ledbetter lost her case, but then her female lawyer encouraged her not to give up. Finally, in 2009, Barack Obama signed the Lily Ledbetter Fair Pay Act.
That's interesting and nice that her fight was useful to many other people in society today. There was also another case of the same category but different approach. In To Kill a Mockingbird, many people had a bias toward Myella Yule, not just because Tom was colored, but also because he was a male and females were seen to be more victimized and vulnerable. You'd think this has changed over time, but another case in 2006 proves this wrong. Three lacrosse players in North Carolina Duke University who were accused of raping a stripper who was hired for a team party have been cleared a year later by an independent investigation by Attorney General Roy Cooper. The case began when, in 2006, a 28-year-old black woman told the police that she had been beaten and raped by the white Duke students. This ignited race, class, and gender tensions, and many commentators believe the privileged jocks gone wild scenario, as written in the US Today article on InfoTrack Newsstand. Too many civil rights activists seem to draw the wrong lessons from the days when young black men in the South were convicted by flimsy accusations from white women like Tom in To Kill a Mockingbird. Durham Coat District Attorney Mike Nifong seamlessly exploited the racially gender-discriminated atmosphere to help his election campaign. Ignoring the lack of DNA evidence and the accusers constantly changing stories, Nifong obtained grand jury indictments against players David Evans, Colin Frenerity, and Reed Seligman. Later, after the independent investigation, it was found that the boys were only guilty of raunchy behavior and were indicted. The prosecutor, however, was faced with ethics charges and was forced to resign.
Hold on, this wouldn't have been the case during the Great Depression, as Tom was still convicted despite the presence of evidence declaring he was innocent. So what exactly happened to the women of color who placed the false case in the first place?
That's what I was wondering. US Today had nothing to say about what happened to the girl who lied, so I went on to look at other articles from other sources, and none of them, including CNN, said anything about the female.
So we can tell from these two cases, and things that we see on a daily basis, that gender inequality has greatly decreased, but still persists.
Many resources said very little, nor revealed the charges pressed against the woman who wrongly accused the athlete. Although the civil rights activists learned maybe a little too much from the past and maybe even took it too far, and the racial roles were switched from To Kill a Mockingbird in the Duke rape case, women are still seen as vulnerable and in need of protection, as in cases such as this, where women are favored over men.
So in the Dupe rape case, a huge conflict represented in it, besides gender inequality, is the racial injustice. However, it's quite opposite from the past.
Yes, it is. As we mentioned before, the main conflict in To Kill a Mockingbird is that Tom, the colored man, is blamed for raping a wealthy white girl, Mayella, and Atticus Finch, a white lawyer, believes in Tom and fights for him. As a result, his children, Jem and Scout, are both bullied at school as their father is supporting a black man in a racist society. To represent this in the 20th century and today, I found a case that took place in 1949 but came to a somewhat reasonable conclusion in 2013. The case started when a 17-year-old girl who was of European descent claimed that she had been raped by four black men, Charles Greenlee, Walter Irvin, Samuel Shepard, and Ernest Thomas. While three of them were arrested and beaten immediately, Ernest Thomas fled. He was later found by a gang of 1,000 men and was shot 400 times under the tree he was found. Charles Greenlee, Walter Irvin, and Samuel Shepard were convicted by an all-white jury, despite a doctor's conclusion that she might not even been raped. Mr. Greenlee was sentenced to life and Mr. Irvin and Mr. Shepard to death. Later, an African-American justice, Thurgood Marshall, ordered new trials in 1959. But just before the trials, Lake County Sheriff Willis McCall shot Mr. Irvin and Mr. Shepard, claiming that they were trying to escape. Mr. Shepard died and Mr. Irvin was refused an ambulance because he was black but still survived.
Oh my God.
And that's not all. Mr. Irvin was again convicted, even though a former FBI agent testified that prosecutors manufactured evidence against him. Charges were never brought against the white law enforcement officers or prosecutors. Mr. Irvin was eventually paroled in 1968 and found dead in his car while returning to Lake County for a funeral a year later.
So I'm guessing that this is a murder.
That's what I thought at first, but I didn't find any sources that said so. So let's not make any assumptions. Mr. Greenlee was paroled in 1960 and died in 2012. His daughter, Carol Greenlee, told Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and the cabinet that there was overwhelming evidence showing her father was innocent. He was accused, put in jail, and tortured for something he didn't do, she said.
Did they apologize?
The pardons came almost 2 years later, after the State House and Senate voted to formally apologize to relatives of the Groveland Four and asked Governor Rick Scott to pardon the men.
So wait, what's the point of apologizing after 70 years when the men are no more and the families are devastated?
I know, right? Which brings us to the final point. Wealth, which plays a huge role in To Kill a Mockingbird and society in general. As we mentioned before, in To Kill a Mockingbird, part of the reason why the black man is accused and not given the benefit of doubt is because he did not hold a proper economic status in their community. The Yule's family, however, was wealthy and well-established, so the judge was biased and leaning heavily towards their side. They say money can't buy you happiness, but when a member of your family is being convicted, it sure can buy them out of jail time, like in the DuPont air rape case.
Yes, go ahead, but can I explain this one?
Yes, sure.
The DuPont heir, Robert H. Richards IV, as said in the CNN article, was accused of raping his 3-year-old daughter and abusing his son in 2009, but got out without any jail time and was put on probation for 8 years. Robert H. Richards was convicted in a court in Delaware, but was spared jail time because he could not fare well behind bars, as said by the judge.
The case was gone unnoticed at the time, but 6 years later, his ex-wife, Tracy Richards, sued him for not only raping her daughter, but also abusing her son. Richards is a great-grandson of the chemical magnate, Rene DuPont.
Many journalists and reporters have tried to repeatedly get in touch with the judge as well as the lawyer that was defending Richards, but have failed. In addition, the judge was prohibited from revealing any details regarding this case, and many claimed that it was similar to the affluenza case of Ethan Couch in Texas.
We can see through this case that the wealthy in the United States still have an enormous influence on the judicial system, although not as much as they did in the past.
This was the case in the book To Kill a Mockingbird as well. In today's society, however, the poor are also being heard at court and being taken into consideration.
The outcomes of cases such as these have deleterious results, of which have no relation to the case nor situation at court. We may all know what truly is just and not, but behind the scenes we may never know, because the most vital information may be shielded from the public as well as false information may be provided.
Today we discuss what we felt was right and wrong about these cases, ranging from gender inequality to race discrimination, in an effort to bring true justice to what we thought these cases lacked and ultimately neglected. Regardless of whether you agreed with us or not, we would like to hear your opinion on our website, doinjusticepodcast.com.
Also, let us know if you have any suggestions for our next podcast or if you have any cases that you would like us to dig deep into. Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, stay just and open.
We're your hosts, Maitha Vadlamudi and Srinalala, signing off.